Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Wednesday, January 24th, 2018. The time is 9:03 a.m. If you're joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, the fifth floor in the Senate Finance Committee room. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon, and with me at the table this morning is Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning.
Senator Machicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Chair.
And Senator Stevens.
Good morning.
On today's agenda, we have SB 143, Alaska's Mental Health Budget. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to invite Mike Abbott to the table and Mary Jane Michaels, the chair of the Board of Trustees. Welcome to Senate Finance, and as I look out into the audience, this morning, I see quite a few trustees, so I'm hopeful that you will introduce them for those that are following us at home or in the building. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Are we going to go to the first slide? We're going to list the trustees. Thank you. As you suggested, we'd like to introduce our trustees. Here today with us is Chris Cook, who's the vice chair. Just acknowledge Chris. Lorraine Durr, our secretary. Paula Easley. And I'd just like to say that Paula has served 11 years as a trustee, and she will be leaving the board in March. And I just want to acknowledge her hard work over all these years. Greg Jones. Greg has also served as the interim CEO and is a current trustee, and he will also be leaving the board in March, and I want to thank him for his service. Jerome Selby and Carlton Smith. We also have here today two appointees from the governor. They have not yet been confirmed, but I'd like to introduce Renee Boner and Mike Powers.
Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. As many of you are aware, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority was established to provide a perpetual trust to improve the lives of beneficiaries. We recognize today, given the current fiscal challenges of our state, that the landscape has changed. Today, we continue to partner with the state as we have in the past. However, once we were known for seeding new projects, to foster best practices in the state through focus areas like Bring the Kids Home, a successful project that ultimately led to bringing children back to Alaska. But today we recognize our partnership and investment must include broader overall systems change in the state so that we can create a system that is both progressive and sustainable. We believe our substantial investment in Medicaid reform and expansion and criminal justice reinvestment are two such efforts. This past year was also a time of internal organizational change, hiring a new CEO after the departure of our longtime executive director, Jeff Jesse, who served as an icon for the organization since inception. And I'm happy to report, after an extensive search, we've hired our new CEO, Mike Abbott. We also looked internally at our governance structure and operating procedures and ultimately hired an organizational management consultant, Catherine Woods, with Raven Management, who worked with the trustees and staff to help us navigate the challenges of organizational change. Over several months, we rewrote our bylaws, created committee charters, and much more. Some of our documents actually modeled after the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. We engage stakeholders and the statutory advisory boards in the process. I believe the time was well spent to take pause and get our house in order. I believe we have a good foundation for moving forward. Going into 2018, I want to say how proud I am of the incredibly talented and committed group of trustees and staff at the Trust, and I want to report that the organization is both financially and organizationally healthy. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to our new CEO.
Madam Chairman, members, my name is Mike Abbott. I'm happy to be here before you as the recently appointed Chief Executive Officer for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And without further ado, we'll talk a little bit about our budget. The trust is requesting the Senate Finance and the legislature consider our budget this year. We are proposing to deploy about $29.5 million on a variety of ways to work to improve the lives of beneficiaries here in Alaska. You can see that this 29.5 is drawn from three primary revenue streams. The largest of those is the investment yield from our approximately $550 million that is invested. 450 of that, roughly, is the Mental Health Trust Fund, which is our sort of equivalent of permanent fund. The other 100 million is our operating reserves, a portion of which are also invested by the permanent fund and a portion of which are invested by the Department of Revenue. So that generates, we use a POMV style payout, and that 21 million represents a 4-year average of 4.25% of our investment values. We also are proposing to deploy $3 million of essentially lapsed funds. Again, that's a 4-year average of our lapsed funds, and that $3 million has been relatively consistent for the last several years. And then our third major revenue stream is the annual income derived from the Trust Land Office activities in terms of managing our lands. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. So that is what builds us to the $29.5 million that you're seeing us describe here. As you can see, looking back on the previous 5 years, that represents the culmination of a relatively useful trend of growth in spendable income from the trust in the 1-4% per year. We're anticipating that that will continue going forward. So I believe it's not unreasonable to expect that the FY20 proposal that we might talk to you about a year from now might cross the $30 million threshold. Certainly our estimates indicate that that'll be the case. So, a little bit more about where that comes from. This is a one way to look at the income stream from the Trust Land Office. It's a busy little chart here, but it shows you the relative change in the relative volatility of the revenue to the Trust Land Office. The different colors on the bars represent the different types of revenues that we receive. There's minerals, oil and gas, land sales, timber, and then our real estate portfolio. Those are the five major categories. There's others as well. Not all of that is spendable in any given year for beneficiaries. A significant portion of that, which I'll describe here in a second, is required to be invested. So the Trust Land Office revenue stream is split, and this is a way to look at that. You'll see bars of the same height as you saw on the previous chart, but in this case, the colors describe the difference between what we call principal, which is the funds that are required to be invested for long-term benefit for the beneficiaries, versus the green portion of the bar, which describes the spendable portion. So the $4.9 million that I described a couple of slides ago is the green portion of if I was showing you the bar and for FY19.
Mr. Abbott, we do have questions.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can we go back to slide 4? A couple of questions. The land that you're listing here in 17, do you have any land sales in this year's revenue projections?
In the FY19
yes.
Revenue projections? Yes. The FY19 projections are based on anticipated activity in the land office. That would be a combination of sales activity as well as leasing and easements and other related transactions.
And how much land are we anticipating selling, and where would those locations be?
We do not have a – we have a variety of sales that – well, let me back up. And we have an ongoing sale process where there are lands that are made available. You can they're posted on our website, which are consistently available for sale. And then at any given time, we're also marketing a variety of other parcels. And so the expectations for FY19 are not parcel specific per se. We're not obligated to sell any lands in any given time frame. We have sort of hopes and perhaps even expectations, but we do not have a schedule that describes specific transactions in specific years.
Senator Hoffman?
And I see that over time that land sales have been a substantial portion since the inception of the corporation. Do you have any idea of how much land has been sold?
In terms of acres?
In acres and percentage of land that the corporation, the trust owns.
I'm checking with Wynn Menefee, the executive director of the Trust Land Office, and he says that since inception, we have disposed of approximately 3% or less than 3% of the original entitlement. So 30,000 acres, give or take.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Abbott, thank you both for being here today. I appreciate it. Along Senator Hoffman's questioning, there's obviously been discussion about land sales. What about land acquisition? Do you both sell and buy for new developments?
We can, and we have in the past. Many of you are familiar with the Southeast Land Exchange, which has been congressionally and legislatively authorized, and which we're in the process of doing the final negotiations with the Forest Service now. That will result in the disposal of some lands and the acquisition of others. And then there are other circumstances where the trust has contemplated and in a few cases has purchased lands, typically to improve the value of other trust lands, to where we might acquire lands adjacent to existing trust lands to increase the long-term value of the initial trust investment or the initial trust lands.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So do you then purchase land occasionally specifically for its development potential?
I don't believe we have done that, where we have gone out and purchased land specifically to be developed, unless there was an association with another trust holding. Now, I'm talking about the trust land portfolio itself now. I'm not talking about our real estate investment component, which is a separate element, and that does require, or that has been where the trust has acquired on seven different occasions, seven different parcels, two in Alaska and five outside, and those are specifically acquired for their revenue-generating potential.
Which is the light blue line on fiscal year 14 through 17.
Correct.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, now a little bit about how we plan to deploy the FY19 revenue that I described a second ago. Trust funding typically falls into three categories. They're not exactly the same, but they're and the sizes of these slices of the pie have changed over time and will change going forward. But for FY19, they are in these three. The dark blue is the approximately $10 million of what we call authority grants, trust authority grants. These are grants made to external entities, typically. for specific purposes, for specific benefits to the trust beneficiaries. The light blue allocation is what we call MTAR, one of the worst acronyms ever, but it is what it is. That's almost $11 million. Those are funds that are allocated to state agencies for purposes, for benefits to trust beneficiaries. Those funds do require legislative approval for them to be accepted by the state agencies. And so you'll see a lot of program receipt authority in a lot of state agencies associated with that $11 million. And then the last chunk, the green chunk, is a little over $8.5 million. And those represent the administrative expenses of both the Trust Land Office and the Trust Authority Office. And those are the funds that are allocated for managing the trust assets, as well as making the funding choices and the allocations for trust beneficiaries. So that's that chunk. Our current priorities are essentially the same ones that we talked to you about last year. We have two primary strategic initiatives underway right now, and these are sort of midstream, Medicaid reform and expansion, and then criminal justice reform and reinvestment. I'd be glad to talk about those at length if the committee would like, or answer any questions, but I think you all know a lot about both of those, and you're aware of the trust's investments and commitments to those areas. And then in addition, and in some cases overlapping with those strategic initiatives, are our relatively long-established focus areas of disability justice, substance abuse prevention and treatment, beneficiary employment and engagement, and then housing and long-term services and supports. And essentially, every dollar of that MTAR or authority grant funding, of that $21 million, works towards one of those six areas, and in some cases works to multiple areas as listed on that slide. So that is not a change from last year. The trust by statute does two-year budgeting, and we are in the second year of that, so that's one of the reasons why you don't see significant change in areas of emphasis from FY18 to FY19, because FY19 is the second year of a two-year process. We'll be initiating the next two-year cycle this summer, later this spring. The planning effort will begin, and then we'll present to the governor and ultimately to you another two-year budget in a few months.
Mr. Abbott, we do have questions. Senator Majicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your list at the top for current priority says Medicaid reform, but I noticed you said reform expansion. I'm just wondering what you meant by that as a current priority.
Sure. A couple of years ago, that would have said Medicaid reform and expansion. The expansion effort has primarily been accomplished, and so now we're focused, and our investment is focused on the reform effort. And we are in the trustees committed approximately $10 million in a multiple-year effort to support most of the state's expenses associated with the Medicaid reform effort, Medicaid expansion and reform. As I said, the Medicaid expansion effort has primarily been accomplished, and now we're focused, along with the department, on the reform elements.
Important question for us. We were recently given a supplemental budget, and we partnered, of course, with the trust in Senate Bill 74. So I'm just very focused on the continued reform of Medicaid, which is more or less eating us alive.
So I appreciate that. Okay. Our interest in Medicaid reform is putting the department in a position to do the Medicaid business more efficiently, and therefore serve more beneficiaries. So we have a strong commitment to Medicaid reform, and we're putting our money where our mouth is in that regard.
Mr. Abbott, Senator Von Imhoff.
I definitely would like to learn more about Medicaid reform, but I believe that is a larger conversation. Being on the healthcare task force, that is one of the things that we're looking at, and of course with SB 74, that's on everybody's mind. So maybe at a later date, at some point where it's appropriate in a forum. Thank you.
Help me, Senators. SB 74 did not pass in this legislative cycle. What year did that pass for those that might be trying to pull up a bill that we're referencing that didn't pass in this legislative session? Senator Michicki.
I believe it passed in 2016, if I'm correct.
That's my recollection.
Thank you. So for those following at home, sometimes when we reference bills, you might be able to pull them up in the current year, but if you access our basis site, you actually need to know what legislative year the bill is focused in, which is why I'm putting it on the record now. There was another bill that passed in regards to criminal justice reform and reinvestment, and I was just going through a process of reading a report to the legislature from the Department of Corrections and the Department of Health and Human Services. And it is referenced of a partnership with the Mental Health Trust. If you could just go into any brief comments that you can provide the general public about how the Mental Health Trust has partnered and why your beneficiaries are extremely sensitive to this particular issue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll start, and if there's more detailed questions, I'm going to ask Steve Williams, our Chief Operating Officer, to come forward and fill in any blanks that I might miss. The trust is committed to criminal justice reform in large part because trust beneficiaries are overrepresented within the correctional system and the criminal justice system generally. As a result of substance abuse or mental health issues or a variety of other beneficiary-related concerns, our folks are inside prisons and inside the criminal justice reform or criminal justice process in ratios that far exceed their ratio within our general population. And so as a result, the trust has been a longstanding participant in a variety of criminal justice reform efforts. The report that the chairman referenced was, in fact, paid for by the trust. And that's one of the ways that we are trying to support the criminal justice reform and reinvestment effort is by trying to measure the outcomes associated with different elements of criminal justice reform. As you all are better aware than I am, that's a broad term that describes a lot of different activity. And we are seeking to try to measure the outcomes associated with the incremental pieces of criminal justice reform. And the report that the chairman referenced is one of the first pieces of that effort. And that research and that data gathering and that reporting and that analysis will continue, and the trust will continue to be one of maybe the largest funder of that effort. And we believe that report has demonstrated that the state is saving money as a result of this and that there are recidivism benefits as well as a result of criminal justice reform activity taken by the legislature over the last couple of years. And we are very appreciative of the legislature's effort in that direction and continue to support that. And you'll hear us talk a little bit more about that in our program.
Mr. Abbott, just to follow up, are we seeing improved treatment options for your beneficiaries as well as Alaskans that are seeking substance abuse treatments?
I think we would say that we are seeing certainly directional improvement things aren't getting worse, but we're not seeing the level of benefit that we believe is necessary in order to get the full improvement in the criminal justice system that we're seeking. So continued investment, which the trust is a part of, and ongoing practice within the criminal justice system is required in order to realize the benefits that we're seeking. And so the short answer is we're seeing some improvement, but we are not nearly where we need to be in terms of access to treatment. And there are limitations on the on the facility side, on the resources side, and in the criminal justice processes themselves.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What, if anything, is the trust doing in regards to opioid abuse?
We are doing a number of things, and again, I'm going to start a description of that, and Steve Williams or Katie Baldwin, our senior program officer, may be able to help if you have more specific questions. We're working with the department, Department of Behavioral Health, and the Department of Public Health. We are funding a number of their activities. Much of the work that we've been doing towards substance abuse generally will make a difference on opioid abuse specifically. So we are both working to expand overall capability as well as funding individual programs. So it's a combination of capacity building as well as direct services. And that can be seen in a variety of programs, both in terms of treatment and housing and other elements of that substance abuse treatment continuum. And I promise not to use that much jargon again if I can help it.
Co-Chairman Hoffman, follow-up.
Follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have a dollar amount that is expended on this endeavor?
I can get that for you in the next 2 days.
Thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So through the chair, how much then, and I hope you didn't already answer this because my mind was going in a million different directions. How much is Medicaid money going towards opioid substance abuse treatment centers? Will it cover the full cost of treatment, partial cost? What's the relationship?
So that's a great question, and it's one of the questions of the moment in terms of Medicaid reform. Is in its current form, Medicaid does not provide a lot of funding for substance abuse treatment. And it's one of the targets of the reform effort is to improve the connection between Medicaid paid services and substance abuse. And I think if you haven't already, you'll hear from the Department of Health and Social Services on a variety of reform efforts that are primarily funded by the trust that are moving in that direction, trying to seek waivers from the federal government to in order to expand services for some Medicaid beneficiaries, including in the field of substance abuse, that would make more substance abuse treatment fundable by Medicaid. But it's significantly limited as Medicaid is currently operating in Alaska today.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow-up.
Thank you. Yes, I do recall reading an article within the last week with the Trump administration saying that waivers, you are correct, waivers are required to be able to shift those funds to substance abuse treatments, but that those waivers are available and they're becoming more available as states struggle with this issue.
I believe that is that we agree with that, and I believe the department agrees with that. The department is in the Department of Health and Social Services is in the final stages of developing their waiver application for the federal government, and I believe it is their plan to submit that in the next couple of months. I encourage you to get more information from the department itself that would begin the process of gaining access to Medicaid funds for that purpose.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So, operating budget. After reviewing previous presentations in front of the Senate Finance Committee from the Mental Health Trust over the last few years, this is typically the place where we would sort of comment on the governor's proposed operating budget and identify, in some cases a few, in some cases a lot, of concerns that we might have with the governor's operating budget. I'm glad to say that we don't need to do that this year. We, almost all of the trustees' recommendations for operating budget expenditures are supported in the governor's proposed budget, in the operating budget. I'll talk capital in a few minutes, and there will be one exception to that. The trustees did not specifically identify the governor's recently announced initiative of deploying $18 million for comprehensive substance abuse and disorder services, but we fully support that. And we're eager to see the legislative conversation on that subject take place. We believe that that's an excellent demonstration of state interest and state support for those services. But that was not part of our budget recommendation coming forward. But other than that, there's some, I would call them relatively minor differences between the trustee recommendation and the governor's recommendation in terms of primarily around funding sources. But other than that, we give the governor's budget, as it relates to mental health programs, a strong endorsement.
Senator Michicki.
Could you clarify for the public that may be listening how much undesignated general funds or the total amount of undesignated general funds come from the legislature to the trust, or is the trust fully self-sufficient in their fundraising from the original land grant?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Senator. The trust does not deploy any non-trust funds. Likewise, only as a result of the settlement in the 90s, only the trustees can deploy trust funds. In many cases, we need the legislature's agreement with some of those deployments on our administrative budget or the funds that are to be spent by state agencies. But no, we do not deploy, you guys don't appropriate any funds to us. We recommend appropriations that you would make to others, and that's primarily what I'm talking about in this context. And historically, the legislature and the trust and the administration have worked together pretty well and have been pretty well aligned on how those both trust and non-trust resources can be deployed.
Senator Michicki.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just typically we start these presentations on the history of the trust so that the public understands sort of the financial independence, and we kind of skipped it this year, but in these days, as you can imagine with what we're facing, I thought it was worthwhile to point out.
Thank you. Senator Michicki.
Next slide, capital budget. So in this area, again, most of the trust's priorities were addressed in the governor's recommendation, the exception being the homeless assistance project and special needs grants. The trustees have long found that housing and homelessness is a significant challenge around Alaska, and the trust has deployed millions and millions of trust funds towards addressing a variety of housing and homelessness issues over the years. We are requesting that the state increase its investment in these funds as well. Some of that can be done through AHFC, and some of it would be general fund increments. And we're fully aware of the constraints on capital budgets going forward, but we do believe that additional investment in housing will have a significant improvement, not just in housing and homelessness, but in substance abuse treatment, in recidivism, and other general mental health issues. There's a lot of research that shows that folks that are, for whatever reason, don't have access to housing, they don't work on their other issues. They're not resolving their substance abuse issues, their employment issues, their education issues, their family issues, if they don't have access to housing. So in some cases, those folks are hard to help. But in other cases, they're not. And we believe that marginal investments in housing will reduce overall state expenditures and will improve challenges in other areas as well. And so we would respectfully request that the legislature and the governor consider additional investments in Alaska housing issues.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Do you collect data at all on the participants that receive your services? on various social factors, as in, you know, 30% are homeless or been homeless for 6 months. So we can sort of see the fundamental links between the cause and effects. This 30%, I'm just making these up, are opioid abusers or have some sort of drug and alcohol addiction. Because you're right, and we understand that there are underlying ACEs, if you will, and others that can contribute to the high costs of programs. So you have that data. It would be nice for us to see that data as well, so we can, maybe we need to make housing a priority this year and substance abuse treatments a priority over something else, because to some degree this is a net zero-sum game versus let's just pile on a pig pile on more and more things. So as you get more data and get more sophisticated with your collection of data, you can fine-tune where the supports need to go.
Madam Chairman, Senator, we agree 100%, and we'll be glad to share with you the data that we have on beneficiary, the populations of our beneficiaries, the relative scale of their membership in our overall state population, and their access to services.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This $5.3 million is in the total picture is relatively small, but do you also recommend where those dollars get spent and which projects, what part of the state are you, if you are suggesting where those dollars get spent?
There's at least two programs that we believe would be excellent investments for the state, and they're not geographically specific. They can permanent supportive housing of a sort that I know the committee's been briefed on in the past. The expansion of that capacity there's virtually no community in Alaska that has enough of that right now. So more of that is necessary both in regional hubs as well as in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau as well. Another program which has proven to be successful in terms of moving people away from other services is what's called rapid rehousing. This is a system of deployment of capital or dollars on an incremental basis to help individual families typically stay housed, typically in market-based housing. So this is rent support and other types of funding that keeps people in the housing they're in. And again, this program, Rapid Rehousing, it's being done on a limited basis in Alaska now. And the data that the Alaska Coalition on Homelessness and Housing has demonstrated is that it has radically reduced emergency room visits, 911 calls, substance abuse, and recidivism. So those are two examples of programs that could be that are already in existence now and that could be expanded based on $5 million or any other incremental investment that was available.
Follow-up?
Thanks.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Abbott, welcome. You're doing an excellent job. Along this line of comments and questions from the previous two speakers, I think what you're saying here, people need to really tune in and listen to. And I think the more data that you can bring back to here is going to drive the operating budget down for us here at this table and to see the cause and effect and the savings you've talked about how that can transpire into our operating budget on a bigger picture and to hopefully do more of this.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. For a period of time, right? Until we cure the problem.
This funding, we are only beginning to learn what other communities have learned before us, is that housing is a key element to a path to improvement for folks with a variety of challenges. The trust has funded a position in Fairbanks, as it turns out. Mike Sanders is working in the office of the mayor of the city of Fairbanks, and he's a city employee funded by the trust, and he's one of the people generating this data that we're relying on. And I encourage folks to hear that from a variety of resources that are either local or statewide that can help you sort of see the benefits of some of these types of investments.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. The governor has proposed a unique way of funding some projects this year that is not typical for the capital budget. So those AHFC dividends may be available. We'll have to scrub that with the departments. But under his stimulus package, he has moved some housing. And so it's just a different approach this year. That approach is tied to successfully passing legislation that would ask Alaskans to contribute to sustaining those programs. And I'm not sure that that will be successful, but that's his approach this year, and so we'll let that play out.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I should also mention that AHFC itself has stepped up with some of its programmatic work. They are also working to expand their commitment to permanent supportive housing. They are now essentially requesting proposals from agencies that might be in a position to provide that, and we're eager to see what impact that is able to have as well. So, and that's an indication of the growing consensus around the benefit of these investments. Moving on, the next element of our budget that we need to present to you is, I mentioned before that little less than $9 million is requested to fund the trust's administrative budgets. In this area, we do have a bit of a disagreement with the governor's proposal. Again, these are mental health trust funds, and the trustees have determined that the appropriate level of funding for the two agencies is approximately $8.7 million. The governor recommended about $8.1 million. Essentially flat funding the administrative entities of both the Trust Land Office, which is housed in the Department of Natural Resources, and the Trust Authority Office, which is housed in the Department of Revenue. There's two separate appropriations in that area, both of which are entirely funded by the Trust's resources. So the governor's recommended approximately 8%. Reduction from the trustees' recommendation. We will be respectfully requesting that that funding be restored. Again, these aren't funds that can be used for another purpose, and we believe that the impact of this reduction will reduce our effort to, one, deploy funds intelligently on behalf of our beneficiaries, in the case of the Trust Authority Office, and to manage our lands and resources in the case of the Trust Land Office. So we'll be working through the co-chair's offices, I believe, and or the subcommittees to seek your support to restore that funding.
Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Abbott, I've read through the DNR's subcommittee notes. I've got that identified. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator.
Senator Michicki.
It's curious, and you may have to turn to some lifelines for this, but how often does the governor reach into the trust budget and make adjustments? I don't remember that being an issue in the past.
It is, I believe this is one of the first times that's happened.
Has there been communication between the governor's office and your team?
Yes, I believe there's been a frank exchange of views. That's the right term, right? Yes, we've had a number of conversations with the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and she wrote a very useful reply to the trust. Be glad to share that with you. Her statement was that just because it's a different funding source doesn't mean that the trust should not be expected to follow the same sort of funding or spending discipline as other agencies. And we would generally, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think the trust has demonstrated that, number one, it spends the money wisely, and as you can see from the growth in our budget and our revenue streams, as well as the quality of the deployment of our resources, that our administrative expenses are being well spent for in an effort to support our beneficiaries. So I appreciate the director's perspective on this, but we would respectfully disagree. She's well aware that we're going to be here, despite the fact that I'm technically a Department of Revenue employee. I'm disagreeing with the administration's budget and recommending that you not follow the governor's recommendation and that you instead follow the trustees' guidance on this issue.
Senator Michiki?
That's fine for now, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you briefly describe how that additional $623 in differences between you and the administration would be spent?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Senator Hoffman. The primary impact will be, there'll be an incremental impact on our personnel. We will either leave positions vacant or eliminate position, one recommended position at this point, and or we will reduce our contractual effort primarily in support of the work we do on trust lands. And that'll take a variety of forms related to external contracting that we would do in support of oil and gas, minerals, timber, et cetera. So I would expect it to have an impact, hopefully a marginal impact, but a measurable impact on the quality of our land management effort and or our beneficiary support.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
May I take a turn? Senator Michiki.
I find it interesting because I've had the Hess budget for several years now, and we've asked for reductions and find a lot of resistance and on actual UGF spend programs, and you have helped us reduce the spend through Senate Bill 74 and other initiatives of a financial impact that could hit the people of Alaska versus your independent source of revenue. So I find it interesting and just a tad bit frustrating to see them pressuring the programs that could save us money on the UGF spend and Hess. I'll just leave it at that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. So this is an important point for the Senate Finance Committee to weigh in on for clarity for the general public. Designated general funds are different than undesignated general funds. And this has been a contentious point between several advocacy groups that believe that we should, and we have, reviewed the use of designated general funds. And so in this instance, as Senator Michiki, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Bishop have publicly acknowledged just moments ago, these designated general funds are not something that can be spent in other places. In fact, the Senate Finance Committee, under the leadership of Jeff Jesse, requested that the land office, I requested that, looking at a downturn in undesignated general fund and our inability to provide new revenue to those beneficiaries of the Mental Health Trust, we asked them at this table to go out and try to use their assets to benefit the beneficiaries in a different way. And we have seen that strategy play out now for 2 years. And so Senator Michiki said it well, that it's a bit frustrating. For me, it is just amazing that we are trying to limit someone's ability to function on behalf of those that may not be able to provide for themselves, whether it's because of addiction or disability. And certainly Mr. Abbott and trustees of the Mental Health Trust. You have my full support in trying to work with the administration to advance a conversation that we had over a year ago to try to increase funding for you, but not use undesignated general funds. And to put a finer point on that, and I'd appreciate senators weighing in, this is the conversation around designated general funds for a state as a whole and why you hear specifically Senate Finance target undesignated general funds. We have not in the past taken away from the university tuition that is designated general funds. The University of Alaska charges students a fee, and we are a pass-through conduit to provide those fees back to the university to improve that system. Designated general funds. They are the use that the legislature had planned for those funds. If we move over to fish and game, that is very important to many regions across our state, both urban and rural. There are fishing dollars that are brought into the state and passed through to local communities to provide benefits directly to that industry and to all Alaskans who benefit from those designated general funds. And so I just want to point out that those funds are very different and are, as far as I know, being used to the highest and best use as intended by Alaska state statute to provide those services in the form of a fee sometimes, in a form of interest or investment at the Mental Health Trust. And I just wanted to point that out for the record for those that are following what they consider a bloated state government. And then as it touches the trust again on Medicaid and the services, we have actively pursued federal dollars like other states in our nation to provide Alaska an equal benefit of return of your federal tax dollars to benefit the people of Alaska in similar ways through the Medicaid reimbursement program. So this is why Senate Finance is focused on undesignated general funds. It is funds that we can control, we can limit, but on designated general funds or federal funds, we are trying everything we can do to stop the downward spiral of unemployment in this state and to provide for the people in a state that is the size of many countries. Does any other senators wish to touch on the topic of undesignated general funds versus designated general funds? Senator Bishop.
I think you did a pretty good job of covering the topic, and I've got nothing else to add.
I appreciate that. I don't want the silence to mean that you don't disagree with the conversation, because I know each of you represent communities that have designated general funds that have been under heavy scrutiny for the past 5 years. Senator Bishop.
I do have one comment. Real brief. You go back and look at the slide 4 or 5 and look at the minerals section and look at the revenue generated from the minerals section, and why would you want to go limit yourself to continue that revenue stream? So,
Senator Machick.
I hope Senator Bishop doesn't mind me helping him with his statement, but we have initiatives that reach across many departments' ability to generate revenue for services for Alaskans. And we have an initiative that's coming up that may be coming up. We're hoping it's found to be unconstitutional. But when you think about the Save Our Salmon initiative, it would very directly and adversely impact the ability for the Mental Health Trust Authority to deliver services for their beneficiaries by complicating every development that they propose in the areas of mining. So that was a great point to bring up, and I think you understand why some of us are so resistant about some of those changes when we have a system right now that adequately protects fish and our natural resources without compromising the ability for some of our state departments to deliver services to some of the most vulnerable Alaskans. So I hope you don't mind a little bit of help, but some folks may not have understood where you were going with that.
Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. There was an audit that began of the Mental Health Trust Fund. Can you tell us where that is? What's going on with that?
You bet. And if it's okay, I'll jump to the next slide, and I'll take those in those three items in reverse order, because the bottom one on our last slide is the issue that Senator Stevens, I think you're referring to. In December of 2016, legislative budget and audit initiated a special audit of on trust-related activity. It was a relatively wide-ranging scope, dealing with open meetings compliance, public meetings compliance, as well as looking at some of the investments that the trustees had made over the last 6 or 8 years, and whether or not those had been properly authorized. So that audit was supposed to be done a month or so ago, and it is a little behind, and I'm not commenting on the, whether it should be or not, but according to Ledge Audit, I believe that is expected to be brought to the LB&A committee for a first review in late February or early March, with a final report in March. We've been working with the Ledge auditors diligently for 12 months now on this, and so that's the timeline on which it is anticipated. So on to which is why the trust investment legislation is on our list. We believe that legislative action is necessary to clarify what the trust's authority is related to the investment of its investable revenue streams. And we're working with members now to start a legislative conversation in that direction, and hope that there'll be something for the Senate to consider in the near future. Essentially, we want to start the conversation even before the audit has begun. Clearly, the audit will come out and it will inform a legislative process midpoint, hopefully. But if we waited until March to start the legislative conversation, it might be difficult to complete it in 2018. And that would be our strong recommendation. So thank you for the question. You're a couple of seconds ahead of me there, Senator.
Thank you.
The other two legislative priorities for the trust, I'll stay in the reverse order. SB 76, which is the Title IV revisions, which somebody in the room could speak to more directly than I could, is a trust priority, and we are eager to see that legislation considered and hopefully adopted. And then lastly, as I mentioned before, we continue to be engaged in ongoing legislation that might or might not come forward regarding criminal justice reform. Steve Williams, our Chief Operating Officer, serves on the Criminal Justice Commission, which is evaluating a variety of proposals now, and the trust is prepared to weigh in as bills develop in order to protect the sort of the core mission or the core objectives that were envisioned in SB 91 and then in SB 54. So that concludes our presentation, Madam Chairman. Be happy to answer further questions or get out of your hair.
Mr. Abbott, you have mentioned staff, and I see quite a few happy faces from the trust administrative team in the audience. You've referenced a few names today. I'm wondering if you would like them to either self-introduce themselves or at least provide us the opportunity to identify a face with sometimes a voice over the phone.
Sure.
If you have your team or if you like.
There are several core members of our team that are with us today, and I appreciate the opportunity to introduce them. Many of them are familiar to you. Steve Williams is our Chief Operating Officer. And is one of my direct reports, essentially supervising the trust authority staff. Andy Stemp is our relatively new chief fiscal officer. He predates me by a couple of months. He comes to us recently from the North Slope Borough, where he's served in a similar capacity there. Wynn Menefee is the recently appointed executive director of the Trust Land Office. Wynn had previously been the deputy in that shop, and we're grateful that Wynn has stepped up into that leadership role. Carly Lawrence is our communication officer. Katie Baldwin, I mentioned her earlier, she is our senior program officer. Kelda Barstad is one of our new program officers working on housing and long-term care, senior issues as well. I'd also like to introduce a couple of folks from our statutory advisory boards. We are benefited by guidance from four advisory boards that are called out in statute. Denise Daniello is here. She's the executive director of the Alaska Commission on Aging. Patrick Reinhardt is here, and he leads the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. And Allison Koulis, who is even newer than I am in her job as the executive director or staff director for the Mental Health Board and the ABADA, the Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Board. So those are four critical partners for us. They are by statute and by practice. There to help guide us as we make programmatic choices and organizational choices on how we do our business. So,
did I miss anybody?
I'd like to acknowledge Brenda Moore. Brenda, thank you for being here today. I know that you're active in many boards and that I served with you when I served on Alaska Suicide Prevention Council. I know that you serve on other boards that actively work with the Mental Health Trust Board. We appreciate all of your service. Thank you so much for supporting the trust. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would also like to support the comments that you previously made. The services that the Mental Health Trust provides is essential. I helped work on that legislation several years ago with Jeff Jesse. I represent approximately 100 communities in the state of Alaska, and I know how crucial they are to all sections of Alaska, and I'm proud of the work that this Finance Committee does. We represent a broad spectrum from Fairbanks to Anchorage to the Valley to Kodiak Island to the Peninsula and rural Alaska. So I would like to thank all of the board members for their sacrifice and commitment to the services that all Alaskans receive.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Hoffman. Senator Bishop?
Yeah, just a final comment. I was reading in the paper early this morning, and it was really briefly, and I just read the headline. I wish I'd have read it for detail, but it appears that there's several hospitals that have increased mental health bed capacity here in the last little bit. And if I'm accurate on that, could you enlighten us a little bit, because it was a good news story for me.
We agree it's a good news story. I think the two primary increments you're thinking about are Valley Hospital and Alaska Regional. And in both cases, that's a great sign generally. It's anything that increases the capacity for care in Alaska is a good thing. And we're hoping those come online sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was kind of dovetailing with all of you here, but the reality of it is the issues you deal with are the reason we're at the top of the heap for some depressing statistical demographics in the state of Alaska. And I actually would like to see an increased partnership. I mean, some of the best families in the state are victims of opioid abuse with domestic violence and suicide and substance abuse of all types. Let us know how we can support you and your mission. It's key. And when we talk about the Senate Bill 91 issues, as we try to balance criminal justice on reducing recidivism while still protecting Alaskans from the effects of crime, I think it's all one issue. We like to separate them in categories, but it's the same. So let us know how we can support you on helping to turn that around, where Alaska's not number one in all the wrong metrics that have been so difficult for the people of Alaska for so long.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. With that, I would again like to thank Jeff Jesse for his years of service to the beneficiaries as well as to the Board of Trustees at the Alaska Mental Health Trust. congratulations, Mr. Abbott, to your new path. I have great confidence that you will be successful, both for your board and for the trustees that benefit from your actions. I'd like to thank Greg Jones for his service to all of us, as well as Paula Easley, who has been on the Mental Health Trust Board for many years. And just, again, best wishes to the appointees that will come before us sometime later in the session. Our conversations, I hope, will be friendly. We do want folks that are committed to help the beneficiaries of the trust and that are capable and willing to put in the time to do those things. With that, thank you for your presentation today. Thank you, Mary Jane Michaels, for your service. With that, on Thursday, the Senate Finance Committee, on Thursday, we'll have a joint hearing with the Resource Committee for an update on the Alaska LNG project. On Friday, the 26th at 9 a.m., we will be hearing on deferred maintenance from our capital budget coordinator in the Office of Management and Budget. Is there anything else before we complete our duties for today? With that, we're adjourned.